Welcome to season 5 of the Mara Pros podcast. This season is about a woman's journey to identity, success, and bliss. My next guest, Julie Chapin, spent 3 decades as a corporate attorney, and after retirement in 2010, she was compelled to return to her acting roots. As a young girl, she often arranged neighborhood productions of plays as she loved performing. She studied at Vassar College, just a few years behind the great Meryl Streep, combined with the tutelage of Bruce Ornstein, widely known for his appearance in Saturday Night Fever, who has taught actors like Sam Rockwell and Helen Slater. Julie has almost 80 credits under her belt, and acting has become a positive influence for her as it allows her to be true to herself and forge a path unique to her own desires. So without further ado, here is my interview with the gifted and talented Julie Chapin. Enjoy the show. Before we begin the show, I would like to correct a fact about Julie that I misreported. Julie actually has over 125 acting credits to her name. Now you can enjoy the show. Hi, Julie. Welcome to the Mara Pros podcast. I am so glad to finally have you on the show. I know we've had to reschedule quite a few times, but it is such an honor and pleasure to have you.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, Mara. It's good to finally have a conversation with you other than as a text.
Right. I know. I agree. I'm so excited for the listeners to hear all about you. So let's just jump right in, Julie. Tell us about you transitioning from a lawyer to an actress and just share your journey with us.
Well, it wasn't totally out of the blue. When I was a kid, I loved putting on plays, putting on puppet shows. I even was in summer stock when I was 16 up in the Catskills as an intern. But you know, life gets in the way. And even though I went to college thinking I was going to be a drama major, I was at Vassar originally, and 2 years ahead of me was Meryl Streep, of all people. And I can tell you, even in college, it was clear that she was outstanding, that she just had, I think it, with her, it's intuitive, just what to do or whatever. And The same coach, Meryl, was coaching me. And the one bit of advice was, if you want to really pursue this, you have to be like Meryl Streep, because she just, you know, everything was focused on acting. And back then I had a lot of interests. And when I actually saw Meryl Streep on stage, in fact, I can remember, for me, it was a pivotal moment, because she did a soliloquy from St. Joan. She was so good. And there was this famous 40s actress who was the coach, Jean Arthur was her name. If you look at some of the classics back from the 40s, you see her in a lot of movies, but she was telling me to be more like this student. And the student was, I just felt like, oh, I could never. So in a way, that's why I pivoted to law, which is different, I know, but there are a lot of lawyers in my family. And I had taken a class that same year, and it was really criminology, but I didn't become a criminal lawyer, though you might say I became a securities lawyer. And there's, God knows, there's been a lot of securities fraud for many years. I clerked for the Chief Justice in Pennsylvania. I was on Wall Street in a big firm. And then I, because I wanted to start a family, I thought, oh, I'll go in-house. That's a lot tamer. So I did work in a company for 24 years and then took early retirement, 55, which I was burnt out, you know, and there was an opportunity to do that. So I took at least a year taking care of some self-care, but also I was placing lawyers from one firm into another firm or in-house because I was good at it, but it wasn't fulfilling for me. And I decided I wanted to do a play or do something, you know. This was in me, you know, and I didn't know about movies, web series, those kind of things wasn't in my background. I had done theater, musical theater even, but I was lucky because I guess I went on the internet and I saw this Bruce Ornstein was running, who was in Saturday Night Fever, if you go back. He was the friend of John Travolta. And at the time, he was running this workshop in New York. And honestly, I don't think Bruce even knows this, but the fact is, I was intimidated by auditioning to get into a good school. And Bruce didn't base his acceptance into his workshop on an audition per se. It was more like, let me interview the person, see how sincere they are and kind of size it up. And so I wasn't as intimidated by that. And Bruce was great because I had no idea how you move into at an older age, like myself in my late 50s, how to get into this. And he said, well, you have to have a resume and a headshot. Pointed me to the person that was very good who did my first headshots. And as far as a resume, he said, well, start up, put scenes that we do in class. And yeah, you can put some stuff you did at Vassar. So, and, you know, go out for student films. And that's exactly what I did. He also was he was teaching at Columbia University, and he put in a word for me, and I did some, I met some filmmakers that were in the MFA program there. I mean, they had great people there. I mean, I forget the name of the director, but that did The Hurt Locker was there. I mean, they went on and did great things. So that was a great way to get my feet wet. Yeah. So it started really with student films. And then I took some improv at the Magnet Theater in the UCB, which is a big, I think I just heard they closed too because of the pandemic. I tell young actors, the best thing you can do is take improv, and then from there you can do commercials, you'll be a better film actor, better theater actor, because the best actors aren't acting, they're being, they're responding, they're listening, you know, and that's improv helps you do that. Mm-hmm. So that's a long answer to your question, but that's how I kind of switched it.
No, that's an awesome answer. I mean, it's great that, you know, a lot of my guests too, when they go into the thing that was calling them, it's always that period of time where you're just kind of taking some time and reassessing stuff. And it's, you're moving towards like a new endeavor, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And you don't even know where to begin. And I'm always fascinated with how just those chance meeting out, or you just start researching and finding different things. And it seems like that's what you really did, Julie. And
I actually had a false start. Maybe it was the year before where I thought you had to go to central casting or something, and you had to do background work. See, the difference between me and a lot of people that, and I'm not faulting background work, but that's not acting. It's not a preparation for acting unless you meet other people while you're doing it who tell you what you should be doing. That just didn't seem like the way to go. It's a good thing I did research and found Bruce, because if I had just left it at that, I probably wouldn't have kept going. But why I'm different is that I wasn't doing it to survive financially. I was already secure because I had retired, and I had I had my 401k, and I had a pension, which they don't have anymore, I don't think. But but so it wasn't that. That's a big problem for young people who want to really be professional, because it's very hard to make a secure living. And I also couldn't care less if I was famous or not. You know, that wasn't it at all. I wanted to do, this is something in me said, I just want to perform, but I want to entertain people. I want to tell stories. I just want to do that. And it must've been pretty strong to have stayed in my body all those years, like 35 years.
Right. What do you feel like was the hardest part to make the transition, Julie?
Yeah, I guess really to consider myself worthy of it, because I knew I was a good lawyer. I mean, God, I had honed those skills over the years, but, right. And I knew what the trajectory was there, but a lot of actors, I got to tell you, I would even say some A-listers have self-doubts. It's just because you're really, if you're good, you're opening yourself up. You're very vulnerable. And then there's a lot of rejection as an actor. Mm-hmm. I don't get everything God knows, I'm lucky if I get half of what I audition for. And you get more as you learn what your type is, or types, in my case, types. But it was hard to feel worthy, and I had to push myself. And and not let rejection be a personal thing. It isn't usually. Usually it is something you have no control over, like they decide they want a different ethnicity or something, you know?
Right. So what have you been working on lately? I know you've had a lot going on, Julie, just from, you know, us just messaging back and forth. So tell us a little bit about what you're working on.
It turned out, I mean, during the pandemic, it was difficult because I took it seriously. I didn't want to risk being on set, and a lot of the independent productions that I do didn't think we're taking enough precautions. But then all of a sudden, things opened up. So at the end of last year, I was in a movie. I'm just trying to think. I did something called Vital Instruments, which was a really cool film. It was a cross between like Reservoir Dogs and Hereditary. And I was for the first time, I was a witch, a head of a coven. But you don't know that when the movie begins. You see a botched robbery, and you see two brothers and their driver who had staked out a quote safe house drive into this dilapidated barn, and their five women were shackled either to the wall or, in my case, this where they used to tie the cows up. It's a cow barn. And the farmer's there, and I don't want to ruin it. It's going to come out by the summer, but
good.
The story evolves. But I would call it, it was a true thriller, horror type movie. Uh-huh. I also did a movie I'm very proud of called Ageless Love, where I was the grandmother in the 40s, a Russian Jewish immigrant. And the writer of that movie, it was his hope that his story would be told. It was a true romance of an unlikely couple. He was only 24 when he met his 38-year-old wife, who was a widow with five children. No one approved, but I was his, and that was in the 60s, but they have a flashback, a pretty long scene with his grandmother, who called Bubby, and it set the tone for the whole movie. And I love that movie because I just channeled, really. I know you may not believe that, but I felt I was bringing my Russian Jewish grandmother through me. And she was like the character. And that's a totally different part than a witch, obviously. This was a wise, lovely grandmother type, nurturing. And then what else have I done? Oh, I did a faith-based series called Prison Letters. And that was the first time. I really haven't done faith-based films before, but I love it. I love it. They feel good. You know, it's a little bit like being on Hallmark, but I think that this one will end up on maybe there's a Pureflix, like there's Netflix. Pureflix has these faith-based ones. And that's, I did another, I would call it comedy horror, called Human Hibachi 2, which is a sequel to Human Hibachi 1, which is made quite a dent. The special effects are amazing. And I did not have to be a cannibal. I just cooked the food. So I found it amusing because if I was cooking finger food, I was cooking fingers.
Oh my gosh. And is that already out or that's coming out?
That I know that I just got in. So something from the writer director, the editing is done and it'll be out next month. They're going to have the screening, so it'll be out in the summer. And I can get back to you on how to find these, but there's always a lag time between filming and when it is distributed or released. And like this past week, I did this is why I love being an actor so much. The beginning of the week, Monday and Tuesday, I was picked to be the mother in a family that it's supposed to be reality TV. And I hope I'm not bursting anyone's bubble, but there's not much reality in reality TV.
No, I tell people that all the time. If you really think that's reality, then you're delusional.
But this was more real than I would, even though for this one family, he picked actors. He had two families down for the sizzle reel. They're going to pitch this series based on Succession. And he had two families, this production company down. And they did Mob Wives. I mean, they've done real stuff. But we played a family up in Pennsylvania, and we supposedly own the Roxy Theater, which is a really beautiful theater in the Allentown area, which They have pictures on the wall. I think Billy Joel made his first single appearance there. You know, he had done cover for things originally, but then this was his inauguration, I'll say. And it's just beautiful theater. So we own that theater. The story is and like 50 other theaters, and we have a son and a daughter, but we're not convinced either could really take over. Yet my husband had a heart attack, and I really think he should retire. I should retire. So that was the story. They also filmed it in the most beautiful home, like Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. That was our home, and we were interviewed there. We played pool there with the kids. And so I was a billionaire, and it was just yesterday. I was in a film where I was a homeless person. This is the same week. You know, going from and what's even funnier or more fun, I'll say, is that John O'Hurley played Jay Peterman in Seinfeld series. That's kind of how I know him. Was serving me soup. And if you do remember, did you watch Seinfeld? People that do, yeah. You remember the soup Nazi scene? Mm-hmm. But anyway, there I am getting soup from this wonderful actor. I had a very little banter there, but you know, and it's just like, I'm in this little film called Another Man's Trash because I'm doing a favor to two people that wrote it who used to be in an acting class that I was in called Playhouse West. In fact, one of the writers played my son in one of the first films I did when I went back to acting. I guess things happen for a reason. And, but that was great fun. And I just was tickled that I could be in the same week. I mean, where else in life do you have such variety, right?
You get exactly. And how do you prepare for it? I mean, because that's such a short period of time. And it's like, you get so many different roles too, Julie. That's what I was really impressed with as well. It's just how diverse you are. So what's your process in preparing for these?
I try to do one at a time if I can, because the hardest thing as you get older is memorizing lines. So I, you know, my process is I do everything to really get the lines down, and I write them out. I sing them, like whatever. And so that then when it's finally time to be filmed, it seems natural. I will tell you though, that this week was not hard, because the sizzle reel was largely improvised. Mm-hmm. And we were given this, you know, the storyline, and I love improvising and taking it from there. And I really had a minor role in this other film, Another Man's Trash. But yeah, so that wasn't like I had to learn lines there either. But when I do, for instance, Ageless Love was pages of material, and I just had to work on it beforehand, and also really think like you're that character. You know, some people say they're method actors, you know, they Daniel Day-Lewis or whatever, for months and months walks around, but look at the size parts he has, you know. I don't think I've ever gone to that length. Yeah. I do feel that whenever I get a part or role, I am that person for the duration of the filming. And I guess it's hard sometimes to throw it away afterwards.
But I've read, you know, a lot of actors as well, they get very, I mean, I guess it's normal as well. You're becoming this person for sometimes a long period of time while you're shooting. And it's hard to just kind of disassociate yourself. I've read some things where actors have, even if it's a really dark part, that they go through a period of depression that they actually have to get therapy for. But I think that's what makes you such a great actress or actor too, you know, because that's what we need when we watch it. I know I'm huge. I love movies. At one point too, I wanted to be in acting. Mm-hmm. I think my calling is a little bit different maybe later on, but I do watch movies, and it's the ones that really resonate with me, where I can really feel it and I can see their emotions. I can just tell the ones who are just, they kind of memorized some of the scripts, but you can see the ones who are just like you're acting. It's get involved with the character and make us believe it. The best movies to me is where, when that movie is over, I'm coming out of a world and like, wow, you know, I've left my reality and come into the movie. Those are amazing to me.
And that, as an actor, that's what I want to give the audience, is this other world and an escape, even if it's upsetting escape, you know, it's just,
right.
Yeah, no, I know. And that's why to have it internalized so you can be that person and then concentrate, focus on the other actor. That's the best thing is to just, you know, focus. I've told this to others, the best things I've done have been with children and dogs, actually, because they don't know any. They are in the moment. They are real. There's no question. Right. I did this one movie, Ghost Goggles, where I played this character, Fanny Goldstein. And when we would break for lunch or whatever, the kids would just call me Mrs. G. Like they could not. It's like, that was fine. I thought that was adorable, you know?
Yeah.
That's who I was to them. The funny thing too, there was, you know, they said it was a family movie and there were ghosts, but they did shoot it at a home that was on the National Registry for like, I don't know whether what it's called exactly, but where there's been some supernatural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And then these kids, they went upstairs and these kid actors, and they taped something and then they showed me there, they played it and there were sounds like, I don't know, that like they captured some spirits. It was very creepy. Very scary.
I can imagine. Yes. Like any of that. My sister, as a part of my birthday present last year, which I don't know why she thought this would be a great birthday present for me, she took me to the hotel where they had filmed The Shining. And and I was like, and she, of course, she didn't tell me. So she just told me we were going to this really nice hotel and she's always all finding great resorts. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, it's a birthday gift. We get up there. I mean, I was just like, okay, this is really not my cup of tea, but I made it through.
Yeah.
But there were really creepy things that went on. Like there was a door rattling. Uh-huh. Nobody was in there. And then it would just stop. And then you would hear noises, but there, like I said, nobody was in the room. And I was just like, okay, I cannot wait to get home.
Well, do you like frightening or horror type? No, I don't either, which is why I rarely, rarely do it. I did Human Hibachi too. I wasn't going to do, but then it's funny. It's like so tongue in cheek, you know, and this Vital Instruments, I guess I did it just because there were elements that were on my bucket list, like using weapons. Unfortunately, it was around the time Alec Baldwin had that terrible thing happen on set. I still don't understand it at all, but because the way we were coached and we were shown things ahead, you know, ahead of time, there's no way that could have happened. To me, it's one and done. I doubt I'll do another one like that. I had to die, you know, and I don't know. Again, I don't want to give too much away.
I get what you're saying though. My friend Rolando, I always tell him he was on my podcast, probably the season before last, and he's in movies and he was in a horror movie. And I told him, I hate horror movies, but I always try to support him. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just a few minutes into the show. And then, you know, whatever the creature was, got him and dragged him off and killed him. I was like, well, I don't have to finish the movie now, you know?
I like that. So you left it when he went. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm done now. You know, I showed my support. I paid for the movie. There you go. I'm a great friend.
that sounds like you are. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there were no monsters in my movies. That's at least I can say that. I mean, maybe the people weren't so nice, but there were no monsters.
So, you know, Julie, I know we're coming close to time, but I definitely want you to just kind of maybe leave some words of wisdom for anybody that's, you know, trying to go through the same thing to make it to where, like you are, where they're acting and they feel like this is their calling. What would you tell somebody that's like just now trying to enter the industry? I know that they should do improv, and I absolutely agree with that. I took an improv class before. When I was trying to do it before, and it was really good, but it was like you say, you really have to react. Like I was very reserved at first, and so to pull it out of me, she was doing this skit where she was antagonizing me. And then I finally I really got mad because she kept cutting me off. She goes, there it is, Mar. That's what I needed. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, part of it is just how you look at it, your attitude. Like, I look at improv as being given permission to be free. Do you know, mm-hmm. children don't have trouble playing. Adults do, because they've been so conditioned with this being with limitations, and it's just, you have to get out of that. You have to, and there are exercises you can do. God knows, when I was in Bruce's class, we used to run across the room, like maybe pretend you were a monster, pretend you were different things, and not be inhibited. It's hard if you've look at, I was a corporate lawyer, and you know, in a law firm that. Everybody wore three-piece suits, you know, and here I am letting it all out. I had a lot to let out. I would tell people getting into it, you have to take classes. Improv isn't the only way, but it is a craft. So you should, and you'll have more confidence too if you learn some technique. And it's good to make friends. It's good, no matter what it is, even if you're going into something else. I think networking is so important. And if you're shy, you can, there are ways to join things online, for instance, groups. And you do have to get out of your shell a little bit. Yeah, you learn tips from other people. I went to my first class and found out about another thing or another, you know, or where be an audition with a part that would be fun and might take someone that's not as experienced as someone else. So that's all I can say is go to classes, network, and remember to have fun. I
don't know. So definitely. And also, you know, with all your projects that are getting ready to come up, can you share like where everybody can follow you on social media and maybe even just kind of get notified of when something is being released for you?
I'm on Instagram because I understand that's kind of where it's at now versus Facebook, which is, I was told that's for old people, but Instagram is everybody. I don't know if that's true, but anyway, I'm J-U-L Chapin on Instagram. And I have a little website that I have, and it's just my name. It's Julie, J-U-L-I-E, and then a dash, and then Chapin, Chapin.com. And I try to keep that up to date with what I'm doing. Yeah, I guess I am on Facebook too, but, and you and I met through LinkedIn.
Wasn't we that? Did.
Yeah. You'd be surprised. I did a little stint of executive recruiting. I was placing lawyers, and that's when I got on LinkedIn before I was acting. And then I just stayed on there. And now I have met directors and writers through LinkedIn too.
That's great. I know it's been really, I've met a lot of people on LinkedIn, probably more than anything, actually, than Facebook or Twitter or even Instagram. It's just starting these conversations and just, you know, being able to meet amazing people like you that just have so much going on, and it's all different fields and things that they're doing. And I'm just learning so much and absorbing it all. So I hope to, Julie, as your projects come out, please, you know, feel free to share like the promos with me, or if you want to come back on the show and talk about it, you are always welcome. And I will post whatever you need me to post on my social media to help promote you.
Oh, you're so sweet. And I've noticed all these things you're writing. I think you're a very strong writer. I think that's great. I'll try to keep up. Yeah, I certainly will follow you on these things too. You're on Instagram, I remember, on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Anything that can, you know, help you network and stuff, I think is just a huge value to whatever industry that you may be in. Yeah. But again, Julie, it's been so, so great. I am so glad we were finally able to bring you on. I can't wait for your episode to be released. I definitely want all my listeners to just keep supporting all your projects. And like I said, you are welcome back anytime.
Well, thank you, Mara.
Thanks for listening to the Mara Pros Podcast. I have kicked off season 5 with some great females who have accomplished great success throughout great journeys. There is so much more to come, and I look forward to the release of the next several interviews that showcase phenomenally talented women who inspire, motivate,
and encourage others to pursue their passions on their own terms and unapologetically. Stay tuned.